141.
Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Traveling Culturati, exploring the style and culture of travel with travel pro Javon Harley, exclusively on HUR Voices.
Well, hello there, fellow Culturati. Javon Harley here, your host and travel pro on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141, the website, travelingculturati.com. Go ahead and check it out. And I want you to tell me what you like, what you don't like, what you want me to cover, any particular topic. So I want to hear from you. Today we have a great show. We are talking about our visit to Washington, D.C., and the experience of the grand opening of the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Traveling Culturati took a group of listeners to be part of history, and today we're sharing that experience with you. We've also got Javon's Travel Minute, the question of the week, do you still use traveler's checks? And the Culture Report is taking us to Zambia, but right now, I've got some travel news. Presidential candidate Donald Trump is changing the name of his luxury hotels. The high-end hotels will now go under the moniker Skyon and will target minorities. Fox News reports that occupancy rates at Trump's hotels have declined this election season. Nightly rates at the newly opened Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C. have plummeted below $500. Trump Hotel's CEO, Eric Danziger, released a statement saying the new name would be a nod to the Trump family and to the success of their businesses, as well as distinguish between Trump luxury and lifestyle brands. Danziger also said that the decline in room occupancy is due to the 2016 election. HipMonk reports that bookings at the Trump hotels have declined 59% in the first half of 2016. Foursquare reports that foot traffic at the high-end hotels have dropped 15% since Trump announced his presidential bid in June of 2015. Trump hotels, however, refute those claims. Several female doctors have spoken out against racism and sexism during airplane emergencies. Time magazine reports that female doctors of color have shared stories of discrimination while trying to help fellow passengers. The stories first went viral when Dr. Tamika Cross was not allowed to help a fellow passenger who fell ill on a Delta flight. Dr. Cross says a flight attendant told her to put her hand down and that they were looking for actual physicians or nurses or medical personnel. One Cross's story went viral. Tyler shared their own stories of discrimination using the hashtag #WhatADoctorLooksLike. Dr. Amina Mogul, a family medicine physician, says she was pushed out of the way to step aside for a male RN to tend to a passenger. Delta Airlines released a statement apologizing to Dr. Cross, saying, "We are troubled by any accusations of discrimination and take them very seriously." The company added, three medical professionals identified themselves on the flight in question. Only one was able to produce documentation of medical training, and that is the doctor who was asked to assist the customer on board. In addition, paramedics met the flight to assist the customer further. The U.S. Department of State has released a new list of countries they don't want American travelers to visit. According to the State Department's travel warning list, over 30 countries were reviewed and are now considered too dangerous for American travelers. The warnings are issued as precautions for travelers to inform them of potential dangers and urge them to reconsider travel plans. Among those on the list are Algeria, Afghanistan, the Bahamas, Bangladesh, Lebanon, Mali, Sudan, and Syria. Reasons for the travel warnings range from wars, political strife, civil unrest, and potential inclement weather. The risk of traveling to these countries aren't limited to American citizens, but to those who are native as well. Venezuela, for example, has a poor economy, which has led to widespread violence. To see the full list, visit 247WALLST.com. For travelers who plan to go to countries not listed on the State Department's list, you may be able to get a cheap flight with American Airlines. USA Today reports that American Airlines will have basic economy fares beginning 2017. The new strategy is to help compete against other low-fare carriers. The fares were initially set to roll out in September, but have been pushed back to next year to avoid holiday disruption. This also gives the airline time to wait out the new competitive pricing rules. American CEO Doug Parker announced Thursday that the airline must remain competitive against other carriers like Delta and Spirit. The basic fare flights plan to offer cheaper flights with fewer amenities and more restrictions. American Airlines expects to launch the new fares in January. New York residents can now face fees for citing their residence as an Airbnb. CNTraveler.com reports that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed a law that means people who list their apartment on short-term rental websites, such as Airbnb, can be fined up to $7,500. Despite New York being a significant market, this isn't the first challenge Airbnb has faced in the city. In 2010, city officials made it illegal to rent an entire apartment for less than 30 days. Airbnb has filed a lawsuit against New York mayor and the city of New York itself, claiming the new restrictions will do serious damage to its business. Airbnb is also facing restrictions in Iceland, New Orleans, and Barcelona. In other news, Brazil is considering free visa waivers for U.S. travelers. Government officials in Brazil are mulling a permanent visa waiver for travelers in several countries, including the U.S. and Canada. The Wall Street Journal reports that Brazilian tourism minister is looking for the country to build on the success of the Olympics. U.S. citizens were given free visa entry during the Olympics and Paralympics. The waivers were also extended for 12 months as part of a trial program. The waivers may soon be extended to travelers from China. Despite the slowing economy, nearly 600,000 Americans visited Brazil in 2015 alone. Current visa costs for foreign tourists can be as much as $160. The Brazilian Tourism Ministry is also considering the removal of hotel taxes for international customers as well as incentive. The Los Angeles Times is reporting that domestic airfare has dropped to its lowest level since 2009. The new report shows that the average domestic airfare was $353 in April through June, down nearly 15% for the same period in 2015. This average is the lowest since the fourth quarter of 2010. Industry experts say the low fares are due to plunging fuel prices, as well as competition from ultra-low-cost carriers like Spirit and Delta. Critics, however, of the airline industry point out that airlines still get revenue in other areas such as baggage fees, food, and entertainment, and the cost to change a flight. Chicago-based carrier United Airlines is upgrading its listening experience. United Airlines is unveiling a new earbud product in the economy cabin. CEO Oscar Munoz is on a mission to improve every aspect of the traveling experience for both premium and economy customers. The earbuds distributed in economy have been a major focus for United Airlines in recent months. The effort to improve the customer's listening experience was prompted by feedback from both customers and flight attendants. United began testing the new headsets a year ago. The improved earbuds have better speakers and a silicone in-ear tip with better noise reduction capabilities. Testing was successful, and the new earbuds are currently being rolled out on flights for passengers. You just might want to take these earbuds home. And I can tell you, sometimes those really cheap, hard plastic earbuds provided by the airlines actually hurt. So thank you, United. Things are heating up for Samsung's Galaxy Note 7 and their users. You could be fined if you bring the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 on a plane and turn it on. Samsung Galaxy Note 7 smartphone has been discontinued, and all users have been urged to exchange the phone for another model. The problems have to do with a battery that can overheat, catch on fire, or even explode. The federal government is now involved. This past week, the FAA announced that there could be a large fine if you bring the Note 7 on an airplane, turn it on, and use it on board. The imposed fine could be as much as $179,000 per infraction. There are reports that some people with the Note 7 plan on keeping it, even though they know about the problems because of its design and features. If you're one of those who plan on keeping the Note 7, just beware that it's not allowed on any aircraft, and you could be hit with a hefty fine if you use it. Delta passengers will now be able to track their luggage with a new interactive tool. Delta's new radio frequency identification bag tags will allow customers to map their luggage based on its last scanned location on the Fly Delta mobile app. Delta's senior vice president, Bill Lynch, says the airline is the first carrier to offer this level of visibility for passengers. The new feature allows customers to map their bag's journey based on its last scanned location. The new technology has been rolled out at dozens of U.S. airports, including Washington National, West Palm Beach, Atlanta, Detroit, Phoenix, Charleston, Seattle, and Boston. The new technology is expected to be added to international locations in the coming months. Well, the iconic character Mickey Mouse has a birthday coming up. The star of the Disney franchise will turn 88 on November 18th. Mickey Mouse first made his screen debut in 1928. To celebrate the momentous birthday, Mickey will be taking a trip around the world and making surprise stops along the way. The locations have yet to be released, but you can follow Mickey Mouse on Instagram and Facebook to see where he will end up. And those who will be at the Disney theme parks November 18th will be treated to commemorative buttons, as well as a pre-parade birthday celebration and a special edition of Move It, Shake It, Dance and Play It. Well, that's all I've got for travel news. And when we come back, we'll have Javon's Travel Minute. Our National Museum of African American History and Culture experience and the question of the week. Do you still use traveler's checks? So don't go anywhere. I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culturati, exclusively on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. As the continent's leading airline, South African Airways, a Star Alliance member, knows Africa better than any other airline. We are Africa's most awarded airline, which includes a 4-star rating from Skytrax for 14 consecutive years and named Best Airline for Africa for 13 consecutive years. With our daily service from Washington Dulles to Johannesburg and beyond, from the moment you board, you'll see we're the only way to fly to Africa. To book your flight, visit us online at flyfaa.com. That's fly
FlySAA.com.
It's Madison the Black Eagle, and here's conservative Alex Jones ranting.
Obama and Hillary both smell like sulfur. You can't wash that evil off. I've talked to people that are in protective details. I mean, they're scared of it.
There are people listening to me, and I don't say this lightly, literally believe him. Imagine if Donald Trump wins, and you've got this attitude permeating throughout this country. All hell will break loose.
Don't miss the conversation. Weekday morning, 6 a.m. East on Sirius XM Urban View, Channel 126.
Tune into HUR Voices as we explore all things legal with host James E. McCollum Jr., Esquire, on The Legal Pad. Join us as we explore the legal issues of today. You don't want to miss The Legal Pad on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, then repeated Fridays at 12 p.m. and Mondays at 1:30 p.m.
If you'd like to stay connected, this is your personal invitation to join me tonight. Hi, I'm Lorna Newton. The connection's on from 8 till midnight, and the only thing missing is you. We've got all the music you love to hear, you love to relax to, you love to tap your toes to. We'll do it all just for you. The Connection, right here on HUR Voices on Sirius XM. That's 8 o'clock tonight, Eastern Standard Time. Bring a friend along.
I'm Harold Fisher. When it comes to the issues that affect you, we're talking about them. We're not afraid to address the uncomfortable, difficult topics or ask the hard questions. Newsmakers, current events, pop culture, women and family issues, even relationships. It's all on The Daily Drum. You can also find me on Facebook at H.T. Fisher or Twitter at HFisherWHUR. Don't miss The Daily Drum Monday through Friday, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, WHUR, and SiriusXM Channel 141.
Holy Ghost Pizza!
University Radio Network's only underground gospel show.
Well, get ready.
Join Marcia Soulful Ray.
And I'm Ray Latil.
I'm Bridging the Gap.
Using Spirit.
Every Thursday afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern Time.
We'll bring you a mix of underground and new school gospel.
Every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on SiriusXM 141 HUR Voices.
SiriusXM Channel 141 presents Voices Specials. Radio documentaries that explore the African-American experience. Voices Specials will educate, entertain, and inform you about the unique experience of Black Americans. Voices Specials will enlighten and encourage with in-depth exploration of politics, education, civil rights, economics, social justice, and entertainment. Voices Specials will air the last Friday of each month on HUR Voices Sirius XM Channel 141. Tune in and join us.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Traveling Culturati, the style and culture of travel. Visit the website, travelingculturati.com.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
Well, don't blame the recycled air as a reason for getting sick after a flight. If you've ever come down with a cold after a plane trip, you may have blamed the recycled air in the cabin. But the notion of germy airplane air doesn't quite fly. It seems that airplanes don't just recycle the same germ-filled air. In reality, planes circulate air from both inside and outside the cabin, filtering it through the same high-quality HEPA filters found in hospital operating rooms. And the air around your seat isn't coming from a sicker section of the plane either. More likely, it's the disturbing number of germs hanging out on airplane tray tables, armrests, the TV and sound remote, and the lavatory door handles. Oh, and that person who's sneezing and coughing in the seat next to you. That certainly doesn't help either. So the next time, blame them. Use your antibacterial cleaning cloths and sprays, and stop blaming the air. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. On September 24th, the long-anticipated opening of the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. happened. The Traveling Culturati took a group of listeners to be part of history. And today, I'm sharing that experience with you with the help of my executive producer, Gene Harley, and some interviews from others who attended. Gene, thanks for joining me today.
It's good to be here. Thank you, Javon.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the first thing we did was attend the Freedom celebrations on the grounds of the Washington Monument. What was that like for you?
It was fascinating because it brought together all of the instances from past events, even the Million Man get together on the Mall. All these people from all over the United States and all over the world coming together on the Mall for this celebration.
It was very electric. It did have that same feel. For us, we referenced the Million Man March. But for a lot of people that we met, especially those who are older than we are, they referenced the March on Washington.
March on Washington, the first one and the later one. It was a big come together, and I was flying in from South Africa, and there were people on the plane talking about this celebration, even coming from South Africa.
Yeah, I was amazed at how the fanfare of the museum and how much people were anticipating this and how much people were emotional about it and what it brought to the city of Washington, D.C. You couldn't get a hotel room anywhere.
No.
And it was the talk of the town.
The town is the United States and probably the whole world. Everyone seemed to know about it, and everyone was there enjoying it from all over. So from that standpoint, it was like a come together of the Million Man March, the March on Washington, but a celebration.
It really was, and I was happy to get the chance and opportunity to speak with different people and get their perspective from the sororities and fraternities and church groups that were there and people who had been charter members since they started the whole process of getting donations. And for 5 years it took, for the 5 years that it took to be built. And then, of course, the dedication itself, the program that began. And it was quite interesting, and they certainly had some iconic figures that were part of that dedication. What speech or whose speech or what part of the dedication program was your favorite?
Well, I knew you were going to ask that, and I think I'm going to take the easy way and just look at the first family and the president, because this came under his watch, and this is something that we've been talking about being Washingtonians for decades, and it really worked out so well. His speech, the location, everything about the museum has fallen in place from a dream that's decades old.
And that it unfolded in his last year of office was priceless. And to your point on that, I had two favorites, one more lighthearted, and the one that you're speaking of with the first lady and President Obama, but also President Bush, because I think we all forgot that it was President Bush who made this happen as well,
That's
who
right.
made sure not only was it going to happen, but the location.
Mm-hmm.
He said that it had to take its rightful place
right.
on the grounds of, or the mall, as we call it, the mall in Washington, D.C., which is the Washington Monument.
In such proximity to the Washington Monument itself, because for those of us from Washington, we know that's where a lot of celebrations have taken place in the African American community. There used to be a festival that took place on those grounds, and there we are with our celebration in really the most prime location of the Smithsonian and the Mall.
It is a prime location. And when you take a photo of it, and there you have the Washington Monument in the background. And also what President Obama did is to bring up the woman who rang the bell, who started it all and kicked off kind of the opening, if you will. And her age and what she has seen and how special this was for her brought everyone to tears.
And several generations of her family being there. And I think it was a tribute to the entire event, because you mentioned sororities, fraternities, social groups, but families were the big thing. There were generations of families that were there. And from that standpoint, it brought to light how important it was, the differences that have been accomplished over so many generations. And the only sad part is that those people who are no longer with us didn't get a chance to experience. But what you spoke about, I think President Bush's legacy has been improved so much more after he's left the White House. This is one thing that a lot of people forgot, but they will remember that he was the person who signed the document that gave that space for the museum.
The executive order for it. Mm-hmm. And to watch the four of them interact, they looked like they were having so much fun up there on the stage. And then my other favorite part, the more lighthearted part, was with Oprah Winfrey and Will Smith and how they had this duel of quotes and dramatic readings that they had in this competition. That was quite nice. And so it wasn't this long, drawn-out, boring dedication and program. It was lighthearted. It was celebratory, and I just loved every minute of it.
And it was a beautiful day.
To boot. We were calling for rain, and it didn't rain. The sun came out. Now, let's talk about the museum itself. We toured the museum, and we took the recommendation of starting on the ground floor and working our way up as is to go back in time then to come into current day. What was your first impression?
I think that shows how well laid out the museum is, because you get to go from the beginning of the slave trade, and even if you are a historian, you learn something in every aspect of that lower basement of the slave trade. And I like the fact that it's in the basement because it fits so well with the tight pack of the ships and the slave castles on the coast of Africa and the countries that were involved that became powers based on the backs of blacks from Africa.
Yeah, it was amazing, and especially for me because I had just returned the week before, just a few days before, from Ghana and visited the very castles or forts that they spoke about the museum with those images, and to have been there. And these forts look like they did then. they haven't changed much. And I love that part about those forts in Ghana, because they haven't tried to clean them up and make them pretty. They have left them the way that they were so that you understand really what it was. What story do you think the museum told? Because everybody looks at a museum and exhibits and they have different takeaways.
I think the most important aspect that comes from the museum, and it starts from the bottom and goes all the way up to the modern time where we have Bootzilla and the mothership on the top level and major artists in hip-hop, but all the way back to the beginning of the slave trade 400, 500 years ago, is that we have a long and beautiful history, and that we are basically African Americans have become the most dominant people in the world. We are leaders in sports, education, all aspects of history. And right now, the ruler of the world is an African-American, a person of African descent. And I'm not talking about 40,000 years ago, everyone. I'm talking about in the modern world of 1,000 years and going forward. And it is something that even the people among us who think they know everything will learn something from going to that museum. And I mean, even from the beginning, even the most darkest time on the first two levels of slave and the slave trade, slavery in the United States, Jim Crow, even there you're going to learn something, and it's going to make you proud of who we are.
I think for me, the story that I think the museum told, or the message, is really to educate. I did not walk away or experience a sad feeling.
No.
What I experienced was this history, this rich history, sometimes dark, sometimes violent and brutal, but this history triumph
as well. And I think that's really what it is. So one thing I would say to people who haven't been and maybe are thinking, I don't know if I want to go because I don't want to go to a museum that's just sad and depressing. Yes. It is not.
No,
it and isn't. I think one of the things summed it up for me the night before, that Friday evening, I was in the bar at the hotel just chatting up and having some drinks after a day. And I discovered this gentleman who had worked on the museum. I noticed his shirt, so I asked him, and he said, yes, I was working at the museum for 5 years. Mm-hmm. I had labored. This gentleman started tearing up as he was talking about it. He had learned so much as he was part of the construction company that was building it. And he said it felt like it was his duty to make sure that this museum opened on time and opened in a way that people really could understand. He was so excited about it. And as I said, he was tearful. And I think that is the emotion that you want to get, because he was just saying there was so much about the Black American culture and history, the mm-hmm. African American history, that he did not know.
No.
And I think that for me was one of the most important things. Did you see something or learn something that you didn't expect or didn't know before?
I wouldn't say that. It added aspects to my understanding of our history, but also it even added to the aspects that I thought I knew. Being a person who's been around for more than five decades, you think you know. But then you sit around and you look at aspects of the 70s and 80s and 90s and say, my God, I didn't know anything. Those areas really painted a picture for me, which I think will help give closure to the understanding of the African-American experience for anybody at any level.
Yeah, I think it was overwhelming for me. It's a lot to take in. And because it was the opening weekend, it was very crowded. We, in some cases, especially starting on the ground floor, you were shoulder to shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found very interesting is, as you said, you go into the basement. It's very dark there.
Yes.
And so what happened is that each floor got lighter.
Lighter and brighter.
And brighter. Until
and
the very
ceiling.
Top
yes.
was sunlit
yes.
With glass windows. And I thought that was indicative of coming from that dark period
mm-hmm.
and moving up and coming into the light. And so that's one part of it. I think that I was so overwhelmed that there weren't things that I really learned, but I know that they're there, and I really want to go back so that I can read things. I didn't take the time to read things because it was just overwhelming, and I could have been there for 10 hours if I had done that. But visiting the section of the Black towns,
mm-hmm.
in America.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize there were so many.
Yes. Yes.
Post-slavery, that there were a lot of thriving Black towns.
You had just done a story on one of them, and there we were standing in front of the sign that represented Nicodemus.
Yeah, that was interesting, too, interviewing one of the surviving residents of 15, mm-hmm. currently 15 residents mm-hmm. of Nicodemus, one of the last surviving Black towns west of the Mississippi. So it was very, very interesting. And then having the nostalgic moments where you see things from your childhood, and they had LPs that they don't sell anymore, but they had the mothership from Parliament Funkadelic.
Yes. And the costumes of so many major entertainers coming through, dating back to 100 or more years, right up to the last 18 months. It
yeah.
was amazing. One thing that stood out strong for me was really at the beginning. I mean, not back to the beginning of the slave trade, but the beginning of the United States of America. To see the founding fathers, and they're sitting there on the bricks of the stones of the slaves that they owned. And these people who preached all men are created equal, who preached that this country was put together to end tyranny, to end enslavement by any other country or any monarch or anything like that, and yet they lived their lives, and many of them died never freeing the people that they knew they were wrong. I mean,
right.
Thomas Jefferson knew that this thing of slavery would come back to haunt them 100 years before the Civil War, and yet he still continued on. And then to just, as you said, to get to each level and see how far we've come in those, and the growth of the United States is based on the growth and the achievements of African Americans, people of African descent. And it is just so clear to look at the transition from the people who came in from the bottom of the boat, who are basically in so many ways leading the world right now. It is amazing. And when you get to that top level and you're in that open glass room with the water streaming and the quotes, not only of African Americans, but Nelson Mandela and other people, it is just fascinating.
It really is. And in just a minute, I'm going to play some of those interviews that I took from different people. Jayla, who's a 13-year-old, and she gave me her perspective. Skylar, a law student, and what she felt about it. A retired veteran, a group of seniors who had participated in the March on Washington, and a young couple in their 30s. I wanted to get a different views from different age groups. Mm-hmm. But I also want to say the thing that I learned and took away is that slavery wasn't because of racism. Racism is because of slavery.
That's right.
And I think what I would like for the world to get from it is that we're not asking any other ethnicity to feel guilty about who they are.
No.
Or to feel guilty about their ancestors. But we just want this acknowledgement and this recognition of the atrocities of what happened, and that we too are American.
The museum accomplishes that, and I'm so proud of it, and so proud that it's a Smithsonian, because it means it's available to anyone at no cost.
I am here with
Jayla Ward.
And how old are you, Jayla?
I'm 13 years old.
13. Tell me about your experience here.
It was very breathtaking. We went and saw Oprah Winfrey, which is like a visionary in my eyes. She's like amazing. I'm from South Carolina, so there are a lot of things from where I'm from, and that it hits home because, you know, there's still little bits of racism everywhere, and the fact that we're moving, we still haven't gotten past it, and it's been so many years. It's saddening, but it's great that we are getting to a place of peace and a place of security. The fact that people use just like skin color to degrade, and that we're all human, we all bleed red blood, and we all are the same.
I'm Jared. I'm 30 years old, and I'm from Philadelphia.
I'm Catherine. I'm 25 years old, and I'm from Orlando, Florida.
So I'm still absorbing everything that's in this museum, like a lot of people. There's so much to see. You can spend an entire day on one floor, and there are currently five separate floors open. And the exhibits in this museum really illustrate how Black people are knitted into the fabric of America. To be able to go floor by floor and almost decade by decade from 1400 to President Obama is really impactful. But as I said, there's a lot to take in. You know, it's an emotional experience. It's exciting and it's motivating.
This was amazing because you come here and you're taught about yourself, and I think that is the most unique feeling. You know, you grow up in schools and you don't hear a lot of these names, and when you come here, you know, you're familiar, you see Harriet Tubman, you see Christopher Pickett, and you're like, oh, these are people that I remember about. But then you're hearing about these inventors and these other abolitionists and people that you just had no idea existed, and all it does is you want to go back home and learn more about it. You want to understand more of your history.
Skylar, I'm 24 and I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm at school here at Georgetown Law. It's been remarkable. When I was upstairs, I was close to tears because it's just a wonderful testament of the Black experience and culture to see all of this and to see it celebrated and that are part of our culture are being affirmed and, you know, celebrated. And I'm so proud and I couldn't be prouder. When I was looking at the Dred Scott decision downstairs, they haven't memorialized the opinion on he wasn't a person. He was actually property. And it's sad because it shows how laws are written by men to control how the country is working. So as a young lawyer, motivates me to say, you know, I'm going to change the laws that are still oppressing us and be the change that I want to see. So it's definitely, it's sad to see it, but it's also motivation in some ways to see that we can change these laws and we can make progress.
Pepper and Joe are with me again today. Tell me, Joe, what do you think?
I was not at all disappointed, and my expectations were so high, that's saying a lot. It's amazing. There's no way to describe it adequately. I loved the way there were quotes along the walls that just kind of transitioned you from the Middle Passage to slavery. Every experience has its own room and level. And while you're waiting, while you're going from one to the other, you get a little bit of a feel through quotes from famous people and ordinary people. And everything is so well done. Little nuances of our culture, shawls and folds, little things, but they add, I think, humanity to a very inhumane kind of existence. So, Pepper, what is your takeaway?
You know, when I walked in downstairs, as Joe said, and as you questioned, we started right away on the C3 on the lower level with slavery. And it was John Holt's quote on the wall that talked about the unvarnished truth. And everything that we saw supported that.
Joe Small, Major United States Air Force, retired. Very stimulating. I know it would take several visits to get the full benefit of it, but there are things that I remember that are depicted and represented in this museum. I'm going to be coming back. We're able to see the making a way out of no way, some of the civil rights things and the military experiences that were depicted in various war eras. Some of the Vietnam era folks we saw, we knew personally. I think it was done very well, and it's an education that most Americans need. They're not aware of what the contributions have been. They went all the way back to the Spanish-American War, other war, Civil War.
Do you use traveler's checks? Do you know what they are? How about where to get them? Well, this certainly sounds like a case for Mo. Let's see if we can find anyone who's still using traveler's checks today.
Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go, and I'm here with...
Kevin.
Kevin, have you ever used traveler's checks?
No.
Do you know what they are?
A substitute form of money when you're traveling, especially traveling out of the country. That way you're protected if you lose them or what have you.
Do you know where you can get traveler's checks?
Through American Express, but you should be able to get them at any bank.
Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go, and I'm here with...
Kennedy Jackson.
Kennedy, have you ever used traveler's checks?
No, I have never used that.
Do you know what traveler's checks are?
Yeah, it's a check that you get your money on, that way when you go somewhere, you can just cash it.
Okay, and do you know where to get traveler's checks?
I think you have to get them from a bank.
Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go, and I'm here with...
Tasha.
Tasha, have you ever heard of traveler's checks?
Yes.
Can you tell me what they are?
They're just like money. They're checks that have a certain amount of money, so you won't have to carry money. They're traveler's checks.
Okay, do you use traveler's checks?
No.
Why not?
Because I always use a debit card.
Unfortunately, I didn't run into anyone who used traveler's checks, but they had a good idea of what they were and where you would get them. Traveling Culturati with your girl, Mo. Always on the go. Back to you, Javon.
Thank you, Mo. Traveler's checks are a blast from the past and are seldom used today, but believe it or not, they still exist. It used to be the most secure way to carry cash during your travels, and especially if you were traveling abroad. They were trackable, and if lost or stolen, could be replaced. It used to be at the top of my list of travel tips. You could simply go to your bank and purchase or exchange cash for checks that were recognized worldwide. We'll move over traveler's checks. Worldwide banking and electronic transactions have made obtaining funds during your travels more accessible and have pushed aside not only traveler's checks, but checks in general. You can get cash on the spot and in local currency from an ATM. You can use your debit card or credit card just about anywhere for large or small purchases. Yes, as I stated before, they still exist. just not at as many institutions as before. And then you have to find an institution that will handle them at your destination. Not all banks or currency exchanges will accept them. And sometimes the exchange rate or fee is higher to use them. Well, if you're old school, just like to have that added security, or have a child and feel it would be a better option for them, you can still get traveler's checks. However, if you get them, they shouldn't be your only cash option. American Express, MasterCard, Visa, and Travelex all offer them. When we come back, I've got the Culture Report on Zambia. I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culturati, exclusively on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141.
What is Fly?
Fly would definitely be Sophia Double G.
CLP, Sirius XM, Fly, your source for hip hop and R&B from the 90s and 2000s.
Yo, what up? This is Usher. I would describe Fly as it's all about how you feel.
Sirius XM Fly is now on your satellite radio, channel 47, and streaming on the new and improved Sirius XM app.
Need some encouragement to get through the week? Want some inspiring words to uplift your spirit? Then join HUR Voices for Divine Inspiration 30.